Good morning, Little Saigon, Seattle. Good morning to all my listeners out there. I've got a little bit of a sore throat today, so if my speech sounds slurred or problematical, I'm sorry. I don't think I have, you know, the COVID-19 deflator mouse, you know? I don't have the COVID-19 virus, I don't think, but I'm feeling a little bit feverish and have a sore throat. It is February the 29th, 2020, Saturday, February the 29th, 2020, right around 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And this is your next episode in the ongoing tale, the ongoing, you know, story of Little Saigon, the part of Little Saigon that we don't talk about on the Little Saigon Report. Indeed, the part of Little Saigon that is so dark, so monstrous that none of us want to approach it, sort of like watching that cheap ripoff aftermarket TV show, you know, Baywatch Nights, when I was stationed in Korea saying, fuck, this is what you see on Korean TV. Not that Hasselhoff isn't great. But Hasselhoff as a private detective at night and a surf boy in the day, that storyline is bullshit. This is the Little Saigon Diary, Episode 4. And as we know, every episode of the Little Saigon Diary, every chapter or episode, whichever word you fucking prefer, I have a sore throat, so fuck you. As you well know, every episode of the Little Saigon Diary begins with a quote from Dr. Freckles. Here's today's quote. The bleak shall inherit the earth. Little Saigon Diary, episode number 4. Sideways Sally has a sprain.
What do you mean, you fuck? I ain't got no problems in my splinctus.
Sally and Crazy Co. arrived at Dr. Grunkus's back alley surgical center and health clinic about 25 minutes after their run-in with Chunky and Harry and the playing of Hold Your Head Up by Argent. Sally was miffed by the whole thing. Sally had twisted her ankle and scraped herself up pretty bad. Sally was also coming off her last hit of meth. The combination of withdrawals and the pain made her angrier and crazier than normal. That and Co. had given her what was left of his Colt 45 six-pack. Alcohol made Sally, usually, more belligerent.
I ain't got no money for that procedure, screamed Sally at the top of her lungs.
The windows, poorly set and with rotting putty seals, shook when she screamed, as if a pane of glass would fall out eventually if she didn't stop. The surgical center, quote-unquote, was really a poorly lit tool shed, nestled in the darkness of forgotten Seattle, in an alley in Little Saigon, where none of the good white folk of Seattle tended to go. Dr. Grunkus's clinic was well known in Little Saigon. Dr. Grunkus served those who had very little money and even less concern for their safety. Dr. Grunkus prided himself on his years of experience, and he would often tell his strange story to any motherfucker who was able to hear it, for as long as they could stomach the details.
Tolo Grunkus, a.k.a. Dr. Grunkus, was about 50 years old, plus or minus. He was never really sure about his birth when it was. His mom had gone completely insane when he was 5 years old. He didn't know why. He figured it was because his father abandoned him and his mom just after he was born. Tolo's mom abandoned him at a fire department station in Anacortes, Washington, hoping someone would take pity. Tolo never saw her again after this. Tolo grew up in halfway houses, foster homes, in Anacortes, Cedar Woolley, and Seattle. His last home, before becoming an adult, was in Northgate neighborhood of Seattle, not far from the mall. Tolo, like many on the streets, failed to make a go of it with normal life.
Excuse me.
Whatever normal life is, or was in the 70s and 80s. Well, he failed. He was beaten, of course. Lots of people in the system start out there. He was sexually abused by his first foster parents, and he was peddled to the pedophile elite of Seattle. All of this before Tolo turned 13 years of age. Nobody cared about the trash in CPS, Child Protective Services, least of all CPS. In 1997, Tolo got a job cleaning up garbage near the Seattle Aquarium. It wasn't an official job, more like the kind of work which paid cash, and involved very little paperwork. Tolo loved this job. He worked hard, and he was even able to afford a crappy apartment near Soto. There was that glimpse he would sometimes talk about, that partially obscured view of normal that he had almost attained, connected to. He had a new girlfriend. They talked about getting married. It was the closest he'd come to peace. On December the 1st, 1999, Tolo and his girlfriend Denise went for a walk, not far from where the WTO protests were happening, the battle for Seattle. They knew to avoid the melee, but that day was special. It was as if the mayor of Seattle had given every cop in the Seattle Police Department extra permission to beat the shit out of these closed-minded protesters, these anarchists, these hippie freaks. Tolo wasn't a protester, neither was Denise. They stopped at a cafe in Belltown. Tolo had the money to treat his girl right. A cop came in looking for suspects, and he found Tolo. To the cop, Tolo and his girlfriend looked like protesters, having a quick meal before going back to the battle. "What are you guys doing here?" the cop asked as he leered at Tolo, hovering over the booth at the cafe. "We're just having coffee, eating breakfast, sir." Tolo was always polite with cops, believing this helped. The cop pulled his gun and walked closer to the table they were at. Denise began to shake. "Don't move one inch! Don't move one inch!" "Sir, we're not causing problems." "I said don't move. That means don't talk, asshole." The cop moved closer to Denise, and Denise, who suffered from seizures, began shaking uncontrollably. "I said don't move. Don't fucking move." Denise's hand looked as if it was going under the table, maybe for a weapon. Perhaps the cop, the police officer, had taken too many amphetamines that day. What happened next was too fast, so fast most of the customers in the cafe wouldn't have noticed, except for the loud, fairly recognizable sound of a pistol being fired. The cop shot at Denise, the bullet ripped through her chest, a jet of hot blood shot out at Tolo, and before he could recover his senses, the cop shot him with a taser. The policeman, Officer Sherby, had a quote-unquote spare gun with him for situations like this, untraceable from a previous arrest. Every Seattle cop has one. This is the gun you leave behind with the suspect next to the body. This is the gun you use when you accidentally kill somebody and you're a cop, and you as a cop need plausible deniability. Tolo was arraigned in King County Court, and his public defender, the one they assigned to poor people, plea bargained his sentence to mere inciting mayhem. And that was it. What could have been the best day of Tolo's life, the day he was going to ask Denise to marry him, the day he was going to believe that even garbage like him had a shot at normal, That was also the day Tolo started calling himself Dr. Grunkus. Tolo lost his mind. By the time of Tolo's sentencing hearing, the judge could tell he was incapacitated and unable to understand the proceedings. She decided to commute Tolo's sentence to 90 days in the Harborview Medical Center, Reed County Hospital, psych ward. Tolo was observed, given meds and group therapy sessions and all sorts of new agey psychological bullshit. He wasn't really crazy. He had simply decided to retreat so deep inside himself that nothing would ever harm Tolo again. One of the interns, a guy named Chris, believed Tolo had multiple personalities. Quote unquote, he suffered a schism in his mind. Of course, Tolo knew who he was. He was just happy the docs were the ones who were confused. When Tolo was released in March of 2000, he spent time in a halfway house off of Rainier Avenue, not far from where he now lives. From that day onward, he was Dr. Grunkus, to those that knew him. Not even Tolo knew his real last name. He discarded his mother's last name years ago. It was revealed to Tolo when he was 10 by one of his less evil foster parents that his mom had left him a recording, a tape. The tape contained information about Tolo's real life, where he was born, how she and her dad arrived in the United States. Tolo listened to that tape one night in 1978. He listened as his mom told him his history. Dear Tolo, I'm sorry about leaving you. I must return to Absalom. I must return to the place I and your father are from. I was told it was destroyed, an island in a lake in the mouth of a giant volcano, destroyed and swallowed. No one even remembers the name of that land and no one cares. I can't take you. Just no way. But I hope you can forgive me one day. And that was it. And that was it, the last he'd ever heard from his mom. And that was the crux, the kernel, the essence of what he would tell people if they asked him, "Where are you from, Grunkus?" He would tell them he grew up on an island nation, a place called Absalom. He went to the medical school there and was licensed by the nation of Absalom to practice medicine. He was Dr. Grunkus, the only known survivor of the island of Absalom, destroyed by a volcano on December the 1st, 1999. "Fuck you, Grunkus! Don't you stick that fucking rod in her whammy!" Co, who was about the same age as his hooker Sally, didn't want his chief source of income damaged. For her age, around 60 years old, her experiences, Sally was still an attractive woman. Well, attractive to people who have to pay for sex. Which, well, is every man that was ever born. Indeed. For her age, around 60 years old, her experiences, Sally was still an attractive woman. Attractive to people who have to pay for sex, which is pretty much every man that was ever born. Crazy Co. met Sally around the time of the great financial crisis in 2008. Sally didn't like to talk about it, but long ago, many drinks of whiskey ago, many snorts of meth ago, she traded derivatives for WAMU, Washington Mutual Bank. The bank that imploded in 2007 is a warning that something ominous approached. WAMU had a small trading desk, mainly working default swaps as finance vehicles for cash-strapped communities, cities, counties, etc. She never considered the work good. She just didn't reckon at the time it was as dangerously bad as it would become. Sally had, quote-unquote, traded WAMU into a sketchy venture involving a tribe of coastal Salish, a casino, and a housing development funded by Saudi Arabia. That sounds nice. The deal was big, billions big. The deal was good, real good. The deal was based upon the assumption that there would never be a crash in home prices. By February 2009, Sally was already hooking, quote-unquote, selling herself to the sex-star baby boomers in her upscale condo complex. By 2012, Sally was strung out on meth, living in boxes in Pioneer Square. This is when and where Crazy Co found her. Co promised Sally he'd keep her safe, and he did. Co promised Sally he wouldn't beat her, and he never did. Co promised Sally he would make sure she was straight, and Sally never went without the drugs she needed. And for all this, Sally earned Co an average of $2,500 a month. Co kept decent books. Co only ran a few other prostitutes, and they were all treated well. But if you were a John, a customer, and you got rough with one of his, they called him crazy for a reason. Co once took a man that would not pay to South Park, not far from the bridge over the Duwamish River, and an EPA, that's an Environmental Protection Agency Superfund site, Superfund River. There was this spot like quicksand, but not sand, not mud. It was a 30-foot deep mix of metal shavings, diesel fuel, toxic chemicals, biological waste, and other crap the environmentally friendly garbage men would dump there late at night, being paid in cash. Co took this man, dropped him in the pool of muck, and watched him sink, scream, yell for the 2 minutes it took the man to drown, to sink in that nasty shit. You hurt my bitch. You touch my bitches, Grunkus, and I'll shove a rod through your ear. Dr. Grunkus fully understood Co's concerns. Most of what Dr. Grunkus did, surgically speaking, was as useful and as dangerous as the magic performed by a Brazilian faith healer. Table magic, hand cons, mental grips. It caused little harm. It was mostly theatrical and probably did nothing to help. Grunkus knew the truth about much, if not all, of healing, quote-unquote. Grunkus learned about the placebo effect while he was being housed in the psych ward. There was a small library for patients in the psych ward's common area with lots of inoffensive literature, stuff like Reader's Digest. He read a Reader's Digest article about the placebo effect and that in many cases it was more successful at treatment than the real drugs prescribed by doctors. This gave Tolo, Dr. Grunkus, in his addled state, a brilliantly weird idea. Brilliantly weird idea. What if he could treat people mainly by fucking with them? What if healthcare is a mind game? Mr. Co, you know me. I've never hurt any of my patients. You say that, but then you talk about metal shavings and knives and grinders and shoving wood chips into open wounds. You do that shit to Sally, I'll fuck you up. Listen, Co. You can go to the ER at Harborview. Co was silent. As bad as Dr. Grunkus was, the Harborview emergency room was worse.
Indeed. As shitty as Dr. Grunkus's office was, the ER at Harborview was worse.
Shut up, just help her!
Dr. Grunkus massaged Sally's ankle. It wasn't broken, just a little sprained. He took a cold iron rod from his toolkit and ran the rod from the ankle to her knee and back again several times. Several times while humming the soundtrack from the musical My Fair Lady, particularly, "Wouldn't It Be Lovely?"
I'm feeling better, Kay, Sally said after 15 minutes of sitting there stationary, undergoing the rod treatment.
I have your real medicine, baby, Ko said as he held her, as he held Sally's hand and kept an eye on Grunkus.
I know you do, Kay, Sally smiled.
She knew the world was hell, and Ko might have been the one person that loved her.
Dr. Grunkus mixed a green Kool-Aid with a red Kool-Aid from his mini-fridge.
He made it seem dramatic because he knew acting was a big part of the cure.
Here, Sally, drink this.
What's in it?
You really want to know? After Grunkus said this, Ko shook his head and Sally nodded.
It's a mixture of herbs from the western slopes of Tibet. Minced liver from fish captured below 3,000 feet. And some other minerals, all of which are necessary to your body's recovery.
It sounded good.
Sally drank it, squinted. Grunkus would often add the extract of the ghost pepper to his mixes, just a few drops, to give it the kick that would allow people to know it's working.
Shit, Doc! That's good stuff! Sally smiled.
Sally smiled and got up from the old barbershop chair Dr. Grunkus used for examining his patients.
Crazy Ko paid him the $50 required. Required according to Dr. Grunkus's public fee schedule posted on his wall.
Doc, I hope I don't see you again, but if I do, fuck, I hope you can help.
I do too, Ko. You know I enjoy helping the sick.
Ko and Sally left the tool shed. Grunkus, who was hungry, knew the food bank would be open for another hour. And so he shut up his office and walked there. The sky was obscured by whatever gumbus Raytheon was spraying that day. Could be barium salts, aluminum, and other endothermic compounds. No one really knew or cared in Seattle. Most people focused on what was important, their smart device. As Dr. Grunkus made his way down Bourne Avenue, he saw an old friend of his, Chunky. And a young stranger sitting on the concrete retaining wall off of the sidewalk.
Yo, Chunky, you feeling okay? As soon as Dr. Grunkus got close enough, he could see Chunky was not okay.
Are you a friend of Chunky's? Harry asked.
Yes, a good friend, and his doctor.
Chunky winced a little when Dr. Grunkus said this.
He's not good, Harry replied.
What's wrong, Chunky?
I've got the demons visiting again.
Fuck, that's not good at all. Not good at all there, Chunky.
Grunkus shook his head and recalled the last time he treated Chunky for the demons. The procedure took 8 hours, rope, Pink Floyd music, a fifth of whiskey, mostly for Grunkus, and some weed, mostly for Chunky. Chunky suffered from severe PTSD, and Grunkus pondered How does a man that old with such a messed up brain case stay alive? So Grunkus understood.
Well, listen, my office hours are over, but if you want, we can go back to my office now and talk about it.
Sir, that would be great, Harry quickly responded and got Chunky onto his feet, assisting him the short walk to Dr. Grunkus's clinic.
These three men made their way the two blocks down Bourne on towards that back alley tool shed. It was nearing evening, and the gray, nasty spider web sky was giving way to darkness.
Grunkus didn't say much on the walk there. He was a little upset he missed going to the food bank.
Grunkus did say to himself, knowing the secret to healthcare, damn it. Damn it if this isn't the best scene for the next act.
And that is the end of episode 4, chapter 4 of The Little Saigon Diary. As I let you guys know earlier, my goal was to try to keep these chapters around 3,000 words. And I think I'm going to be able to do that. I think I'm going to be able to do that. The first couple chapters are longer, and that's just what it is. But you know what? Guess what? We're flowing. We're learning more about the story. Little glimpses of how this all connects. Like the pages of the infinite time space. The space of infinite time, the space of the cosmic chronos. All of the causality chains are unfolding before us. We know who Harry is now, that's good news. We've learned a little bit about Hitler. You know, the more we learn, the less we like, right? We've learned about the octopus people, and we've learned about Dr. Grunkus. And we know about Crazy Co. and his hooker Sideways Sally. So for this episode of The Little Saigon Diary, the bookend to The Little Saigon Report, the Baywatch Nights to Baywatch, I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did enjoy it, I don't have a paywall, which means you could stop listening now and you wouldn't even have to listen to me beg for money. But if you listen to this and you enjoyed it and you've taken care of your food, your water, your shelter, your MOP 4 nuclear biological chemical warfare suit, your overpressure bunker like a fucking Intel clean lab, if you've taken care of all your needs, including your robot hookers, and you still have money left over, you fuck, you can donate to The Little Saigon Diary. There'll be links to donation sites, Venmo and PayPal, in the description. And there are links on my SoundCloud homepage, which is conveniently found using iamsully.com.
And for little Saigon, Seattle, and all the scrumbly folk and all the Gronkus lords, for all the people that live above the sidewalk and below, for all of us in little Saigon, from us to you out there somewhere, maybe you're in Colorado. Maybe you're in Ohio or Tennessee. Maybe you're in Texas, you motherfucker. To all of you out there, I hope you have a great Saturday, and I hope you take care of yourself, and I hope you don't get infected with the Flatermouse. You know, the Wu flu, the COVID-19, the monkey herpes. That's right. Don't get the monkey herpes. Have a great rest of your weekend.